a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 270. So good news, bad news. The good news is I found my mic arm. It was at the office. It was in my shop. So the bad news is I forgot it and left it there and came home to record in my home studio. So I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and buy a second mic arm. So I'm back. I'm holding the microphone, kicking her Rat Pack style. You know, I just feel like I feel just a little punchy. So I want to snap with my left hand. You know, like when I'm holding the mic, you know, with the front hand. Sometimes I feel more like, you know, like a 90s rock, an 80s or 90s rapper, you know, like when I'm holding the mic. But usually when I'm doing the show, I mean, I just feel like I'm just like snapping with the left finger. I'm rocking it Rat Pack style. All right, man, back in the swing of things. Man, I'm so busy. It's ridiculous. I got back from New York. And there was just like so many fires to be put out and so many things and so many good little weird opportunities hopped up in the middle of that and had all this stuff that needed to be done that I hadn't been able to get done because I've been traveling for like either traveling or working almost nonstop behind the bar for the last couple of weeks. And how many of you are like, you know, you go and you get into some kind of a context where you're out of context, right? So you're traveling or there's a big event to get ready for. So you bracket everything off and then anything that comes up during that time, even if it's kind of urgent, if it's not about to blow up, if it can wait a few days before it blows up, then, you just kind of like, I remember, David Allen telling me one time from the guy that wrote Getting Things Done that, I explained a situation to him where it's just like, this is a huge situation. It was a bad situation. It was going to be a long time process to fix it. I didn't know what the next project was, let alone the next step, but I needed to get it into my system and get it off my mind, right? And he said, just put police tape around it. Just put police tape around it. Name it. Put it as a project and to just look at it and be like, not right now. Or, you know, maybe just come up with a, you know, brainstorm about police tape project as your next action. Put it in anywhere as far as your list category and just move on, you know, and just come back to it when you can. But, you know, and so there, so when you're busy and you're just like, things are just going crazy or you're out of town, you know, that's why people like to get away from their cell signals. You know, you just get that, that whole kind of like, oh, look, there's something kind of blowing up, but there's literally nothing I can do about it right now. So there's something that kind of lets us off the hook where we go, you can either just kind of feel frustrated about that, or you can say, you know what? I can't do anything about that right now. And you just move on. There's just no other way around it. You just move on. You just kind of go, well, I will get to that when I can. Right now, I don't have I need to do that. So I will move on. So it's kind of like that when you travel where, yeah, I need to get tags on my new car. I know that I've got a 60-day grace period, but for the sake of my family, I bought the car from. So I need to get these tags done. I want to get it out of the way. And, you know, but I, you know, you're like, you're on the road or behind a bar stuck or you're back on the road again. That's what it was. So I was like, I couldn't do anything about it, you know? And so things like that, there was just a bunch of stuff like that. And then I just didn't anticipate how much of it there was. And I kind of slept in yesterday because I could just feel myself. I get to a point, you know, when I know my body's been beat up pretty good. You know, especially like my knees and stuff from walking all over New York. You try carrying a big fat guy around New York for a few days, see how you feel. And I was just like, you know, I have to, I have to just kind of like listen to my body. And I know me, if my body is beat up and I don't listen to it and I don't sleep a little extra and let it have it, I get sick. And I cannot afford to get sick right now. So I kind of slept in a little bit and I thought, you know, all I have to do is this and this. And I kind of got up and I started looking at my notes and I was like, oh my God. Oh yeah. I have to draft that. Oh, I have to do a show. Oh, I have to. Oh, but that closes it. I need to get down to the, and then the phone rings and you're like, hey, and it's like, oh gosh, it was just like one thing after another all day long yesterday. And, you know, I just all day long, I was just like, oh my gosh, I was off. I wasn't even working behind the bar. I had planned on being in New York all through Tuesday. And so I had set the schedule where I was also, I actually had a clean day of just being able to get some stuff done. And I went nonstop all day long and just barely got anything done or barely made a dent in what needed to be done. And so, I got up today and I had to work the first half of the day at the day job. And that was fun. And that was like, you know, but that was kind of busy for a while and like a lot going on. And it was like, wasn't able to get much, you know, computer work done in between customers or anything. And, still had to get the tags on the car. So, but I managed to just get a bunch done and kind of get it back going again and kind of get back on top of it. And there's still a ton to be done, but I'm back on top of it again, where it was crushing me yesterday. It's so funny coming from like travel land and being in travel mode to back in real life mode was just like, man, brutal. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that I'm not the only one that feels that. So yesterday, I want to talk about a couple of things. I mean, you know, this is kind of like the reality filtered through the lens of me is this show, you know? And so part of what this show is about is I take seemingly mundane things and I talk about them. And maybe they're still mundane, but they're mundane in the way that they hit an interface with the frustration of a human person or the delight or the hope or the optimism of a human person, more likely the frustration of a human person. If it makes it on the show, I tend to share my frustration with you guys a lot. So yesterday I went and got insurance on my new car. Now, given my new car that I bought from my family over the Christmas break is a 2012. My old car is a 2002. So it's 10 years newer. But between 2006, when I bought that car, and 2000, until like I had some major change in the insurance, I won't even go into that. There was a stupid thing that long story, but if that hadn't happened, there wasn't any major change in my insurance that whole time. So I was paying the same thing when it was fairly new and valuable as I was later for full coverage on this thing. So I'm like, well, you know, that was a Volkswagen Passat wagon. It's nice. I mean, it's like an 85% Audi, this thing is. And it's like, I bought it certified pre-owned with 50,000 miles on it, but new, I mean, it's an over $30,000 car, right? It's a nice car. So I got this 2012 Chevy Cruze. Now this is a nice car in the sense that it's newer. Right. But it's a pretty plain Jane car. I think new, it was just a little over 17,000. So I go in and I'm thinking maybe my insurance is going to go down because this is a less expensive car. I don't know how this works. Let's see what happens. Right. So I go in, man, my insurance went like way up. Like, I'm not going to share the figure on the air, but like what I'm paying for insurance is, I mean, ridiculous. And it's frustrating to me because I've just seen this industry, you know, just not operate on, on a logical basis. You don't feel like you're playing in a world that makes sense, but it feels like you're caught in this world. I think that insurance is one of those things where you go in and you get insurance, you go through this financial transaction, and you feel like it is so confusing And it's so many variables and so many trade-offs and the stuff that you just, you come away, no matter what you do, feeling like you're either getting completely screwed over or you've made bad choices. I'm just like, oh my God, it's like buying a car or something. It's just, you or just weird stuff, just like health insurance or what. It just, it's so frustrating when you, some, when an industry and the possibilities of a purchase or a sale are just so complicated and there's so many variables and so much of it is completely out of your control. And it takes so long to fine tune all of these little variables that then to try to get quotes across different companies, like you would have, it would just take forever to go through these steps. It just frustrates me. So you walk away just going, look, fine, just give it to me. Yes, fine, I'll pay that, whatever. And then every month you see that come out of your account and you're just like, God, I bet I'm just getting getting taken to the cleaners there. It just frustrates me. I hate when I get put in a position where I have to make decisions and it's something you have to buy because just for safety reasons, you don't want to run around uninsured. And at the same time, you legally have to be insured. It's like, what in the world? It's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely crazy ridiculous. And I was just so frustrated. And that was on the tail end of this day of like being piled on. So then, but you know what? I got home last night and something completely beautiful and unexpected happened. And I think it set the tone, you know? So I'm going to tell you about that when we get back from the break. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. I need to get like a big intro, like some people screaming, thunderous applause, something, you know, canned laughter or something. I need to make it sound like a sitcom. all right. So I traveled, if you're just catching up, I traveled all weekend to New York City, had a spectacular time, saw people driving like crazy people, people who honk their horns the way they breathe, and walked all over God and creation, and then came back into reality and just got daily life and all the little mundane exigencies of life and business life and all that just like smacked me in the face when I got back. I was just like, oh, it's brutal. And so, wow, there's a really weird sound outside of my house right now. It sounds like someone's drilling into my foundation with like a drill or something. No idea. It's, wow. All right. Sorry about that. I'm just like, all of a sudden I'm like, what in the world is that noise? Yeah. So I just walked right back into reality and it's got my head handed to me. And then after a day of being handed my head, I went to go get insurance, and then that was a really taxing, horrible situation. And so then I went and got some groceries because everything in my fridge was dead and I felt shameful for wasting vegetables and stuff. I try to buy food and cook and stuff and get, and then I end up traveling and then it just goes bad and I feel so bad because I waste food and I waste money. But anyway, so I went to the grocery store, got some food, came home. And I was cooking. And then I get this text from Perry saying, hey, Father's going to come over and bless the house. And I realized that I had missed a super cool theophany divine liturgy that I talked about last year. And that it was that time again. So sure enough, out of nowhere, Father O'Loughlin shows up at the house and does the super cool house blessing, the Byzantine house blessing. So we got the Jordan water out, which we had some from last year, which had was in a Tabasco bottle, which just makes it even cooler. So here's this priest walking around the house with a Tabasco bottle full of holy water, you know, and we're just chanting and singing along with him, carrying a candle, and he goes through, and it's just so cool. It is like something that you associate like with church, like a priest, vested, candles, holy water, that whole thing. And it's just like in your house for you, and he's going around blessing this house, and everyone is singing along and stuff. It was just spectacular. And I don't know, it just made me feel better. It just made the whole situation just kind of like, all right, cool. You know, so I was able to go to bed. I think I would have gone to bed and just had nightmares all night about just like standing in line trying to buy insurance or something, you know. So there you go. So when in doubt, get your house blessed. Then today, after working this morning, I had the polar opposite experience. I called the admissions people and found out that my car's new enough I didn't have to get an admissions tested. So I went straight to the DMV with my newly acquired, completely overpriced proof of insurance, and was able. So I got on the DMV site, right? This is one of those times when logic helps in your life. So I get on the website, and there's this new office, a new DMV office. And I'm like, okay, cool. Where is that at? And so I go to Google Maps to find it again through the Google Maps app, and it's not on Google Maps. And I go back to the website, and I have to find just the right section, because there's other sections of the DMV site that office isn't listed. It just opened like in December, right? And so then it dawns on me, dude, if I'm having that much trouble finding this office and it's brand new, most people probably aren't going to know about it, and it's probably going to be way slower. So I go to the trouble. I find that, cut and paste the address. I find this office. I go to this little DMV office next to a pizza place in the middle of a shopping center. And I walk in, and I'm trying to find the line, and the guy that's behind the counter just waves me up like there's zero wait. There were two other people in the room. By the time I was kind of into my transaction, I was the only person in the room for 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, picture this. Middle of the afternoon, a completely empty DMV office. I had like three people working on my stuff, helping each other out. You know, it was amazing. I was just like, it was so streamlined and so quick. And, you know, I was just like ponied up for another like tedious battle with bureaucracy, and had a complete and total shift. Did not expect that at all. And So there you go. So that balances out the insurance. So, I keep hearing random sounds in my house, like someone's like coming in my house or something. I apologize if I'm distracted, because the drill stopped. I think that like there's a workman working on something downstairs or something, because I keep hearing like random noises. So either my house is haunted or someone is in the house working on something and I didn't know about it. So, I always say it's a radio without a net. Yeah. So I got my tag. So there's the moral of the story. It took me two segments, one and a half segments. I have a new car. It has powertrain warranty left on it, cause it's that little miles compared to my old car. It's paid for, it's insured, and now it's licensed. I just want to share that with you, because I like to share the big one, because I have been stressed about my car for a really long time, because it was kind of going downhill, and it was obviously had more things wrong with it. And I'd been kind of looking for a car and couldn't find anything I wanted. And I was saving money, and I kept trying to save money. Something would come up, and I didn't want another car payment, but I didn't want to be worried about having a real high mileage car again. And I managed to pull it off. thanks to the help of my family, sold me a good car for a cheap price. I managed to get car issue off of my mind, which I'm like, yes, I'm just kind of doing my happy dance. And I just wanted to do my happy dance on the show. All right. So there you go. Happy dance, car done. Let's get on to something more interesting and more meaty than my chattiness. I would meant to do that in one segment. Coffee slurp here. Coffee hit to get me going. All right. Shifting total gears. All right. So I want to talk about, so Obama did a bunch of pardons. One of the people he pardons was Chelsea Manning. Okay. Now I'm not going to get into what Chelsea Manning did or what, whether or not the sentence that they received was correct or whatever. What I'm going to talk about is I had no idea who the hell Chelsea Manning was. They're going on and on about Chelsea Manning and how Chelsea Manning did this thing. And there's this black and white picture of like this blonde chick that's like, you know, Chelsea Manning. And I'm like, finally, I figure out this is Bradley Manning. This is the dude who was in the Army, who leaked a bunch of classified documents and who's rotting away in Fort Leavenworth right now. But I guess what I hadn't heard is that the day after he was convicted, he came out and said, I've always felt like a female. I want to be a female. And evidently, we, the American taxpayer, have been paying for him to have hormone treatments, and he has turned himself into something interesting new. I'm not going to say a woman. So I had no idea. So such hateful speech. I don't want to, you know, how dare me affirm nature. Anyway, so long story short, I just started notice they did this so well. And even then, once it did come out in the story, they talked for about 5 minutes about the story before they mentioned that Chelsea Manning is a transgender woman who was born Bradley Manning. And I'm like, okay, that's who they're talking about. I finally figured out who in the world Chelsea Manning was. But the way that they just seamlessly talk about her and she, and they, you know, and I don't, it's fine. It's like I said this back with Caitlyn Jenner. I'll call him Caitlyn Jenner all day long. People can change their name legally. I don't care. You're free to change your name. You can't change your gender. That just gender is your biological sex is your gender. There's no distinction between the two. Gender roles are a completely different thing. What men or women can do that change from society to society, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. I'm not even talking about sexuality and who you want to come sit on your lap. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about gender. Talk about what you are in this male, female, yin, yang dualism that all mammals are built in. Anyway, that being said, I don't even want to talk about that particular issue. What I want to talk about is the way that the media has gotten, they just start talking about this in a way and just very nonchalantly use the pronoun her, and they use she, and they just do it just like in this, they're just doing a story about a woman, and they just do this story about this woman, and then they drop in there some way, and which is kind of like bad journalism in a sense, because how many of us were sitting around confused all to heck wondering who in the world this human being was they were talking about, and then it turns out, oh, it's Bradley Manning they're talking about. So that's what I want to talk about. And I want to pick this up after the break, because you might think that this was only a problem on kind of the liberal media, but you'd be wrong. So let's go to the break. When we get back, I want to talk about this little issue a little more. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. So we're talking about Chelsea Manning being pardoned by Obama. And we're not really talking about that because we're not talking about what Chelsea Manning did. The leaking of these documents, what these documents were, whether this was justified, why she should be in Fort Leavenworth. See, I just did it. Why they should be in Fort Leavenworth. See, the degradation of language happens afterwards. You know, I'll tell a story. So we're talking about the way that the media just starts nonchalantly getting into. Now, I will admit, this was on NPR. Okay, so I was listening to NPR on the radio, and the she and her and all that. And I'm sure that if I was listening to a different station with a different slant, then that would be a different thing. But I got evidence of the contrary. But this actually brings up an anecdote. And since you know, shout out to Jack, shout out to Zach Candler for telling me that the asides are the best part, or the sidebars are the best part. I was just telling the story. Now this is a great story, so I'm going to tell the story. This is very, very appropriate for this concept, for this content. So a couple years ago, I went to Austria. I've probably told the story on the air before, but this is a good story, and I pick up new listeners all the time. So if you haven't heard this story, it's worth listening to. So I go to, and I'm just going to take the time to tell it correctly too. So this might take a little bit. So I had to go to Austria for a consulting thing to go over. I had to go to the International Theological Institute in Gaming and do some consulting work for them. And so I get over to Austria, and I've been up, like, the way that the layovers went when I had to leave and everything, it was like I've been up about 36 hours. I've been awake about 36 hours. And I roll into Vienna. There was a confusion about the date. And they finally get someone out there to pick me up. And I get into to Trumount, to where the ITI is. And that's when it was about 36 hours, right? And they're like, well, you know, there's a dance going on. You have to go to this dance because your friend is there that I have a friend that works there, and she's there and she's waiting for you, and all these people want to meet you, and you have to go to the dance. I'm like, okay. I put my bags down. I'm like, let me brush my teeth. And they're like, well, actually, it's a formal dance. So I'm like, give me 45 minutes. So I get the suit out of the bag. I hang it up in the bathroom. I turn the hot water on as hot as I can get it. I start brushing my teeth and kind of like trying to catch my second wind. Sure enough, steam my suit a little bit to get some of the wrinkles out in the shirt. Get in a shower, get cleaned up, put on a suit, go to this dance. Have a great time. Surprised by I catch my fourth wind. Having a good time at the dance. I go to bed about 1 in the morning. 8:30 the next morning, 8 o'clock, I wake up. I feel like $1 million. And I've never traveled overseas before, right? This is my first overseas trip. So I'm like, man, jet lag, schmet lag. I got this. This is a breeze, man. I'm a rock star on this jet lag stuff. So kind of consulting meetings all day, hanging out, getting to see the place, you know. And then that, you know, it's like 3 o'clock. I'm like, I have nothing to do until dinner. I'm just going to take a nap. So I lay down, take a nap, and I sleep till like 10:30 at night. So I wake up and everyone's going down for the night. Oh man. So I walk into this little village, of Trumel, where the ITI is. And there's a place called Cafe Vest there, right? And the cafes in Austria, even in the small towns, like it's a restaurant and a bar and a place you go get coffee. It's kind of all in one. And so I go in, you know, and order a glass of Rotwein, which, by the way, I mean, in that section of Austria, which is pretty near wine country, you could spend €2, order a glass of red wine, and it's really good. It was like really good wine, really good Blaufränkisch or Zweigelt or one of those red varietals, and it was delicious for like €2, right? So I sit down having a glass of wine, and there's this big old TV outside, and people are kind of coming outside and smoking and going back inside, and I'm sitting outside kind of like under this old patio. There's a big old TV there, And there's like something going on. I could tell it's kind of a contest, right? And it's like a music contest of some kind. I kind of get the feeling that this is, it turns out it's the Eurovision Song Contest. And I didn't know, I had never heard of the Eurovision Song Contest. I didn't know anything about it. But I guess, you know, I've kind of figured out, oh, it's like one of these big music competitions, like America's Got Talent or something, but this must be like the finals and they're each from different countries. Okay, this must be, okay, cool. I kind of figured out what it was by watching it. And then, so sure enough, they keep showing the competitor, the finalist from Austria, which I realized I had seen a news story about. And so the Austrian competitor was named Conchita Wurst, and the competitor was this bearded drag queen, like in this big old ball gown, face full of makeup, this tight crop black beard, looked like, you know, I don't know, Persian or, you know, something like that, some kind of Middle Eastern descent. And so this, you know, this person's come up. So then comes time for the Austrian to compete, and all the people come outside to watch TV, right? And, you know, Conchita, I mean, she's got a killer voice. I mean, it was amazing. I was really impressed, right? But so there's this old, old, old Austrian man. He was like kind of in traditional dress there. And I ask him, I'm like, are you rooting for the Austrian? Kind of broken German. And he answers me in English. And I thought that he was, having trouble with grammar, but it turns out it was a matter of natural philosophy. He says to me, I hope it wins. That's faint praise right there. So there you go. So he, she, and it. There's a question, right? So getting back to NPR and their coverage of Chelsea, only on the counter position, ladies and gentlemen. So getting back to the coverage of Chelsea Manning's pardon from Obama, the story, and I'm not talking about Obama pardoning. I'm not even talking about what the person did. I'm talking about the way the media covered it. And regarding this issue, there was just an unflinching use of the word her and she, and they didn't feel any need to explain the situation of who this person was or why they were calling them the person this or that. For like 5 minutes into the story, right? So I finally figured out. Now, as coincidence would have it, you know, the next story came on. I'd heard this news report before. So like I kind of flipped through the channels and I went over to I go back and forth between a conservative talk station and NPR when I'm not listening to Breadbox Media, of course, which you should be doing. I tend to channel surf in my car though when I'm in traffic. It's just, you know, I don't concentrate very well in thick traffic. So I just kind of like surf around. So I go over to the conservative talk station, which I can only take in small doses, and they have people calling in about, they must've been talking about like gender roles in marriage or in relationships. Right. And so this is the conservative. So a woman who said that she was a Latina, she was Hispanic is the word she used. She was Hispanic. Called in, she was talking about how, you know, what you're expected to do and how you're expected to relate to your man and all this in her culture. And, but she kept talking about, you know, like with my partner now and my partner this, and the guys that were responding, like, well, you know, how long have you been with your partner and partner, 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 partner? And I realized that now, even on the conservative station, the idea of gender and the idea of permanence or any kind of legal standing, any kind of sacramental standing, there's no difference between two men who are living together in a relationship for as long as they want to be together and a man and a woman in sacramentally married for life. Everyone is just partners. And anything that's a flavor inside of quote unquote partner is just like vanilla or chocolate. It's just a matter of taste. but and they have even learned to use this language. It's the language of partner. And we've been taught that subtly to refer to partner, not to spouse sometimes. If you want, but then you're like, you're assuming that I am beholden to some outdated system of permanence and dominance with some patriarchal paradigm or whatever, you know. So partner, spouse is too traditional, it's partner. And so I just want to throw that out there, that a lot of times it's not the big government regulation. It's not who can go use a bathroom. It's not any of this stuff that changes society, that changes how we view relationships and reality. A lot of times it's just a slow, careful shifting of these words. And I, going back full circle, when I said they, and I'm like, then comes the degradation of language. The if you don't know, the safe thing to do is to say they. But now we've started breaking down the distinction between plural and singular, because the plural is gender neuter. And now that's a situation when language is meant to reflect reality. And when you start breaking down language's ability to reflect reality, because the way that language is developed doesn't reflect your perception of reality, then language itself suffers and our ability to speak about the real suffers. But all right, let's talk about something different when we get back. I've ranted about this enough. You're listening to The Counterposition. We'll see you on the other side.
Then all the colored glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dope.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. Okay, for the last segment here, I'm trying to decide which direction I want to go. So I caught some of Obama's last press conference. And, you know, here's the thing. Like I've said before, I like Obama. I firmly disagree with him. I disagree with his worldview, the same way that I disagree with Bernie Sanders. But when you hear the way Obama talks about America and about the way he talks about his family and the way he talks about trying to raise his daughters and trying to be a good role model and the way he treats his wife and all these things, I think the guy is ideologically wrong, but I think he's a good human being that's trying. I think he's been sold a bill of goods in a lot of ideological positions, but he sounds, and he may not always act sane, and it may be his ideology gets in the way and he does some things that are really, I firmly disagree with the policy, and I firmly disagree with the ideology behind that policy. But he seems like he is sane in trying to say something cogent and sane when he does it. Now, on the other hand, we have Trump coming up here. A couple days, he's going to be our president for real, for real. I mean, even when I agree with what he's saying, the guy sounds nuts. He's all flustered and kind of like, you know, speaks in like partial sentences and just cuts in like he's just like some kind of crazy ADD toddler or something, and just brags like crazy about everything. You know, Obama's kind of self-deprecating and kind of, you know, I mean, you just get the feeling that by all accounts, everybody, just Donald Trump does not take teasing or kind of humor about himself, or he doesn't have a self-deprecatory bone in his body. Like He's very thin-skinned and very, very touchy and very proud. And it just, I think that I just want to reiterate this thing that I can, there can be the situation in the politics right now where there's someone that I just can't stand as a human being. I like some of their policies around business and around job creation, around even trade deficits and some stuff like that. I'm interested. It's pretty funny. No one's talking about how I brought this up the other day when I did the little reluctant segment on Trump's genius, but no one's acknowledging that the thing that everyone says that, you know, the union is the backbone of the Democratic Party like it used to be, but the United Steelworkers and all these people have been begging for certain things when it comes to trade for years and not getting it out of Washington during the Obama administration. And before that, even with the Clinton administration. And Trump, this guy who's supposedly like this big, you know, Wall Street business guy, you know, out, you know, he's a hotel magnate and all that stuff. This guy gay, he's the thing that he's preaching that is ticking off a lot of liberals is the union position on trade. That's why he's got like the head of the Steelworkers Union out there, like saying that he's behind what he's doing. He's actually arguing the trade position of the unions, which is kind of funny, right? Because if there's anybody who looks more like management, and then he, it's interesting because he nominates this guy for Commerce Secretary, and I forgot who the guy's name is. I have to go look it up. And this guy is a turnaround artist. He buys companies, fixes them, gets them profitable, turns them around. And one of the things that he's done that with is a bunch of steel mills. And so once again, the union guys are like, people on their left are going, this guy has got so many conflicts of interest and he's a business guy and he doesn't have any experience in government and blah, 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 blah. And then the union guys are stepping up and going, I can point to 10,000 steel jobs that are still in existence because of this dude. And I just think that there is just a deep disconnect. Now, I hate that. There's some of these policies I've been wanting someone to come along and do. The dropping of the business tax rate, the creation of more, business-friendly, small business-friendly, bigger business-friendly, more job creation-friendly, expansion-friendly, more trade-friendly policies. But I'm not super stoked that it's him that's doing it, right? And then it's funny. It's kind of like when Obama got elected, I remember looking at Ann Bradley one day saying, because we saw some guy wearing an I Miss Reagan shirt, or I miss Ron. And I said, heck, at this point, I miss Bill. I miss Bill Clinton at this point in the game, you know? And so I'm kind of getting it, you know, on his way out, I'm listening to Obama and I'm thinking, see, why can't a decent guy who seems kind of sane, who wants to be a good role model for his kids, who's been faithful and married to one woman all this time, has raised some strong, independent women. I mean, it's like, why couldn't we have that guy be sane and want to do, create some real jobs and not be the enemy of small business and actually put the trade deficit right and all this? Why can't we have a decent human being that seems sane doing the right thing? But I guess maybe that's just too much to ask of politics these days. But that's just a moment I had when I was in the car. And it's funny. It's like sometimes it comes down to the role of government, right versus left. And you're seeing kind of that with the new education secretary, DeVos, and people are either loving or freaking out because she's really pro-voucher, really pro-charter school. She's really pro, ironically pro-choice when it comes to education. And she wants, but that comes down to a breaking of the monopoly of just like full on big public schools ran by the government that are like the arms of kind of indoctrination, and they're just freaking out about it. So on that, on like some of these parts of the new government, it's breaking down the old school liberal versus conservative, big government versus small government lines, and the adjoining kind of like skepticism if someone doesn't have a history in government. But it's just funny because the trade policy of Trump is basically the platform of the United Steelworkers Party, of the United Steelworkers Union. It's not. I mean, he seems like tomorrow he's going to get inaugurated, or Friday he's going to get inaugurated. And is it Friday? Yeah. Friday he's going to get inaugurated. And it's already like a bunch of executive orders he's going to do. And I'm like, executive orders per se are the problem. And George Bush started this in this deep slant towards the executive branch just carrying all this power. And Obama's continued the collection of power in the executive branch. I would be more impressed with Trump, not if he came in and did a bunch of executive orders to put things the way we want them. If he came in and said, this is how I want them, but we're not going to do it through executive orders. I'm going to go through Congress. I'm going to stop legislating from the executive branch. I'm going to actually put things back the way they're supposed to be in our Constitution. That would impress me more than even if he does executive orders that put something in, you know, in place that I'm in favor of. I would be more impressed if he said, I'm going to go through the system, because part of the problem is we're not going through the system anymore. Part of the problem is this unhinging of the checks and balances in our government. He would get me deeper on his side if he did that. But anyway, there's my gestalt ADD political commentary for the day. And I don't really have anything to go. I don't have time to go on to the next thing I was going to talk about. I don't know. I guess I've talked about this a whole lot, but I just want to see. I think that there just needs to be a third option where we start from scratch. We show our work. We share our recipe. We argue about the recipes as opposed to just tasting and arguing about which one tastes better. We really go back to the roots of all these ideas. We talk about the nature of freedom. We talk about the nature of government. We talk about the dignity of the human person. We talk about the nature of economics in a society and what that's for. We talk about what happiness looks like. We talk about what it would look like. We talk about the role of the family. And we talk about the human factor and sustainability, but we also talk about our relationship to creation and to ecological sustainability. We talk about all that. And we come back to our senses and we elect some sane human beings and we commit ourselves to reality. That's, and I think that I've said it a million times, and I think I'll say it again. I think that Catholic social doctrine could play a huge architectonic role in that project. I think that we understand what reality is. We understand what the human person is. We understand what society's about. We understand the common good. We understand rights and responsibility, and we could share that wealth with the world. We just might have to rebrand it a little bit. And, that's something that's a project that I'm hoping to take part in different ways. Anyway, there you go. There's the show for the day. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.